You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Can't buy me love.
What's up, y'all? I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. As it is the 3 o'clock hour, it is Maggie and the Millionaires talking money. This week, we're talking about global power and money. Talking about how money and power operate internationally, not just in the United States, and how they affect things in your family and here at home. We're kicking off with an explosive new report from Oxfam International, which is out today. Its title is Multilateralism in an Era of Global Oligarchy: How Extreme Inequality Undermines International Cooperation. And tomorrow, the UN General Assembly, convening in New York City, begins a high-level debate about global inequality. So to talk about this and what it means, we have two very special guests. First, Nabil Ahmed, Director of Economic and Racial Justice at Oxfam America. Nabil leads Oxfam's agenda on economic and racial justice. He's authored and co-authored flagship Oxfam reports, including Inequality Kills and Inequality Inc. He was formerly a national organizer, worked in the private sector at Unilever, and is a graduate of the University of Manchester in UK. I'm also joined by Scott Ellis, the founder of the Excessive Wealth Disorder Institute. Welcome, gentlemen. Thank you so much for being here. Nabil, I'm going to jump right in. This report is pretty shocking. And people here in the United States, and I think any polling, it doesn't matter which poll you look at, shows that people have this anxiety, this feeling that things are not as they should be. They have this great intuitive sense about these extraordinary levels of inequality. But I don't think the scale of what this is, either here in the United States or globally, is widely understood. How bad has wealth inequality become? How much money do the ultra wealthy and corporations really control?
Maggie, this is an amazing question, and thank you so much for having us on. And thank you for your bravery and your willingness to be able to talk about these issues. It's a great question. Look, you know, we can look back in history and we think of those moments that are etched in our minds and we're taught from a young age, like the Gilded Age, you know, and think of the robber barons of that time. Well, guess what? If you look at the data, wealth concentration at the top in the United States today has actually surpassed the peak even of that era as well, right? Yep. We are living in a second Gilded Age. And I like the way you set up the question, right? Because we can look here in the United States and yes, there are record levels of wealth concentration. In fact, if you look at just the top 0.1% in the United States, it's just hit its highest recorded peak of wealth since records began. And we can talk about America, but this is also a global story. And by the way, America drives that global story. Yes. This report that we have out today, it shows that the world's richest 1%, they own more wealth than 95% of the world put together, right? We know extreme wealth concentration has been getting worse for decades, but since 2020, it's just gone off the charts, Maggie. It's really hard even to put it in the words. Let me put it this way. Just think of the five richest people in the world. Okay, the five, and by the way, they're all men, no surprise. Elon Musk, Jeff Bezos, and their buddies, right?
Yeah.
Their wealth has doubled since 2020 to over $800 billion. That's just the five richest people, right? And at the same time, the world's nearly 5 billion people, that's 60% of the world, they've actually seen their wealth fall, right? They've got poorer. If you just were to plot this on a chart to say, okay, Nabil, where are these trends going at current rates? And listeners may want to just kind of just bear with me here for a second. At current rates, we could see the world's first trillionaire within a decade from now. A trillionaire, a word that shouldn't even exist.
Right.
And at the same time, at current rates, it would take over 200 years to end poverty. That's where things are heading. That's what the data shows. And that is incredibly frightening for all of us.
Scott, when you talk about wealth inequality, you talk about it as a disorder. Why?
I think a lot of it aligns to what our colleague has just been talking about. As this is all happening and it's becoming increasingly clear, a lot of the collective response is, okay, anyway, it's Tuesday, what's on TV? We're very worried about differences, as we should be, in the gender pay gap and in the racial wage gap of either percentage points or several times. But when we look at differences in wealth of thousands of times or 10,000 times higher, we don't have outrage. We're not immediately focusing this on this as a priority. And I think when we talk about who has excessive wealth disorder, on one hand, it's the wealthy folks who, even though they have more than they can ever spend, continue to seek more, et cetera, et cetera. But it's also regular people at home too, because as they should be, they're focused on living their lives, but they're not seeing how big this issue is, how important it is, and how important it is to address it and seek change.
Yeah, when we think about these issues, and I appreciate you bringing up gender and gender pay gaps and racial wage gaps and the dispersion, the disparate levels of household wealth that we see, but those categories are subsumed by leaps and bounds exponentially of this extraordinary level of wealth inequality. Again, not seen in our country since the Gilded Age, the time of the robber barons and monopolies. That's the concentration that we're starting to see. But this report from Oxfam and Beale is not just about inequality. It's about oligarchy. It's about how the ultra wealthy use their wealth to amass and retain political power and to exercise that power to continue to amass ever increasing amounts of wealth and power. It just keeps replicating itself. What are some of the examples of this operating here in the real world?
You're so right, Maggie. Oh, by the way, I wish radio stations across the country talked about these issues in the way that we're doing right now, because this is a number one issue and we can't avoid it. And I'll answer your question. Just before I do that, you mentioned the racial wealth gap there.
Yes.
Check this out. The racial wealth gap in the United States today, in 2020, which is when the research went up to, in 2020, the racial wealth gap is the same as it was in 1950. Mm. Imagine it actually started to get better, and then it got worse as extreme wealth concentration got worse. Yes. That also set back the racial wealth gap in this country. And it's so important that we look at that. And you're right. These aren't just billionaires that we're talking about. They're also oligarchs, because there is a power dimension to this, right? Wealth breeds power, power breeds wealth. And if you just look at some of the industries that we're talking about here, you know, sometimes we look at corporations and we think, oh, they're just corporations. They're kind of just working for shareholders. There's a lot more to the story. In fact, if you look at just the world's 10 largest corporations, 7 of them are either run by a billionaire or have one as a principal shareholder, which is a very powerful role. And across industries, we've seen how billionaires have cornered markets. Check this out. You know, 2 companies today control 40% of the global seed market. That used to be 10 companies 25 years ago. You know, 10 giant big pharma firms have actually merged from over 60 two decades ago. Just one company, Google, gets 90% of global search. You know, I could go on with these examples. Not only do you have corporations which have grown their power and consolidated more power across industries, you've also seen the power within those corporations entrenched in fewer and fewer hands. That gives them a huge amount of influence over the rules, over the norms in our economies. And let's be clear, they benefit from this. You know, 8 out of every $10 of profits is going back into the hands of the extremely wealthy. That's who the large corporations are paying out to. We have to be talking about extreme inequality, and we have to be talking about this global oligarchy.
Nabil, when you mention the consolidation in these industries, the 3 that you picked, and we could look at almost any industry, we're seeing this consolidation, not just within the United States, but globally as well, vertical and horizontal integration. The 3 that you mentioned, I think, are worth emphasizing here. The seed market, that is the world's food supply, okay? That it's absolutely critical, incredible consolidation there. Google, it's effectively access to information. Whose information gets elevated? What do you see first? What are you most likely to consume? And then you talked about pharmaceuticals, the very drugs that so many of us rely on to live. We could go on, but you just take the three that happened off the top of your head, and it is truly, truly scary. And again, when we talk about corporations creating profit, this fact that you mentioned that $8 of $10 of profit goes back to the wealthiest shareholders, not folks that have our 401ks and a little bit of this or that and a mutual fund. No, no, no. It's not accruing to our benefit. It's accruing to that oligarchical class. Scott, when we start to think about solutions to this problem, what pops to mind, perhaps top of the list?
I mean, for me, the key mechanism is tax policy. I mean, there is a structure for this. It's about all of us agreeing on what the rules for our society and our economy should be. In a democratic society, the power should be with the people, with the voters, to define the rules of the game. And a lot of times we talk about capitalism and making this work, and we want to make sure we manage government regulation effectively. Absolutely right. Make sure companies are able to move forward and make decisions, but we need to set the rules of the game. And right now the rules have been set up in a way that advantage the excessively wealthy. And as Nabila said, and the excessively wealthy are using this power to continue to shape the rules. We need to recognize that's happening. We need to think about it as individual citizens and voters. And then we need to use tax policy to manage the extreme accumulation of wealth.
And I want to make this distinction clear here, Nabil. When we talk about making regulations more efficient, that's effectively in the details of the rules of industry. What we're talking about is policy decisions at a much, much higher level and who effectively gets to benefit when economies boom. Is that fair to say? Again, we're not talking about regulations in the details. We're talking about the highest level of policymaking, tax policy and the like.
Absolutely, yes. We're talking about tax policy. We're talking in taxing the ultra-rich and corporations. We're talking about things like labor policy,
yes,
right? Ensuring that workers have their rights, get paid, you know, should be paid a living wage, can have the rights to organize. We're talking about things like anti-monopoly,
yes,
you know, so that we don't have these massive corporations that can, you know, shape the democracies or so-called democracies in their favor. And in each one of these as well, Maggie, guess what? And maybe we can go into this. There's a rich history of government that fights back for working people on across all these areas. It's been done before. We can do it again.
Government should work for you and me, the middle and working class folks. My special guest, Nabil Ahmed, Director of Economic and Racial Justice at Oxfam America, with a absolutely groundbreaking report coming out today, joined also by Scott Ellis, Excessive Wealth Disorder Institute founder. I'm Maggie Dawn. We'll be back with more after these important messages on the Civic Media Radio Network. Welcome back, everybody. My name's Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. We're in the first half of the 3 o'clock hour, and that means it is Maggie and the Millionaires talking money. I've got two great guests today. Nabil Ahmed, Director of Economic and Racial Justice at Oxfam. They have released a report today titled Multilateralism in an Era of Global Oligarchy. Tomorrow, the United Nations kicks off a big debate on this explosion of inequality, really getting turbocharged since COVID. We're also joined by Scott Ellis, founder of the Excessive Wealth Disorder Institute. Nabil, we've been talking about this symbiotic relationship between the ultra wealthy, tax policy, labor policy. And what that's code for is basically the ultra wealthy being able to control the levers of government and to enact and achieve the policies that they wish to see. And by doing so, further enrich themselves and further consolidate power. But the history here is rich and it goes back quite a ways. This didn't just pop out of nowhere, did it?
No, it didn't. It didn't. Now we're seeing actually we're at the peak of a period that's lasted a few decades where the very richest in our society and the corporations that they control have really got their way through lobbying, through shaping norms and rules in their favor, and they're massively from it. And that's how there's been such a concentration of wealth. But what people maybe don't know as much is that there has been a different time too, as well. I look at the period after World War II, for example, in the United States, and we by no way want to say this was like a time in which things were perfect. There were still gaps, you know, especially people of color weren't able to gain as much as others. But we've also got to say that was a period in which we saw some progressive legislation. Let's just talk about one of the issues that we've talked about today, tax, right? There were efforts to ensure that the richest in society were paying their fair share. President FDR literally went to Congress and he proposed a rate of 100% at the very top tax rate on the very richest people in the United States. So he didn't get 100%. They settled for 94%.
Yeah.
And over a three to four decade period, that top marginal income tax rate in the United States, it averaged 81% until the early 80s. People are shocked when we hear this. And that was also a period in which the middle class grew, in which there was investment in innovation and infrastructure in the United States, even put a man on the moon. So I think we can like learn from the experience of moments like this to say we can actually do policy a different way. We can look in the United States into its history. There are other countries that have done things a better way. But we also got to be clear-eyed to say things have gone in the wrong way. In country after country, it's a global trend. And we need to put the brakes on this extreme wealth concentration. It's not just an academic issue. It's something that affects us all. Sorry, Maggie.
No. Please, listen. I'd like somebody to ask the former MAGA president to make America great again. Then I presume that you endorse an 81% effective tax rate for billionaires, sir. That would certainly start to close some of the gaps. Scott, you've thought about this quite a bit. When you hear some of these statistics from Oxfam's report, that the world's top 1%, the most wealthy, own more wealth than 95% of us. What should we be doing in response?
I think the first step is like, wake up, America. This is what's happening. This is real. People have been working very hard to hide this fact, to distract you from it, to get you to talk about other things. And I think, like we're doing right now, we should be talking about money. People need money. How do you help get a house for yourself and your family, pay for kids for college, live a wonderful life for yourself, work hard and get the benefits of that? That's the system we should have. We all need to be aware that it's being abused and exploited by a very small number of people to enrich themselves and hurt the rest of us. And so I think a lot of it's about all of us realizing this is happening, realizing we do have power, which is to vote to change the rules. And then we need to change the conversation. And we should talk about wealth. We should be talking about what financial success means and what's enough, and then decide how to limit it when people, congratulations to them, they've achieved success. How do we limit it when they've gone beyond that so they don't undermine our capitalism and our democracy?
Scott, very quick follow-up. I've had callers that call in and say, listen, I want to be able to leave a couple million to my kids, et cetera, et cetera. And I say, we're not talking about you. We're talking about people with 30, 40, 50 million in net worth. We're not talking about middle class workers that are trying to leave something or help their kids buy a house. We're not talking about that. I have people call in and say, well, what about the small businesses? And we raise a corporate tax rate. And I say, listen, if you're a small business and you got a lot of expenses, we're talking about taxes on corporate profits. What is your brief response, Scott, to people that say those things? Because I always want us to take care that we're not trying to tax those folks. It's not you. If you're listening to the show, we're probably not talking about you, right?
Yeah. I mean, I basically say, do you have $30 million? If you so, congratulations. If you have less than $30 million, everything I'm talking about will only help you by making a fairer and better system. If you have over $30 million, I want to have a conversation and I am going to ask for your help. Another way I've been thinking about this is let's just talk about how many houses you can own.
Yeah.
Everyone can own one house. That'd be wonderful. Maybe two, maybe three. Is it okay to own five? How about 10? Well, if it costs like $30 billion to buy every house in Milwaukee and Elon has $247 billion, he could buy every house in Milwaukee and like almost a million other houses. That's what we're talking about.
Yeah, so it's wealth at that level. Yes, excessive wealth. Nabil, the G20 is set to meet in November, and one of the items that they're discussing is an international agreement for a minimum tax on billionaires. Oxfam has that idea and a few others. Tell us about that. We got about a minute left, sir.
Yeah, absolutely, sure. So we need to implement these progressive kind of policies. We need to do them in every country, but we also need to act at the international level. Brazil has shown leadership at the international level. It leads a G20 group of countries, and it's been trying to put forward this proposal to say, let's get to a global standard in which we're taxing the very, 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 very wealthy in every country to tax billionaires. And they've pushed other nations. They've got us to a place in which, for the first time in history, the G20 countries came together and said, okay, actually, we do need to tax the rich, and we'll begin to cooperate to do so. We've got a whole long way to be able to get to where we really need to get to, but it shows we can't tackle this problem in only one country alone. What do billionaires do? They'll stash their money away. They'll find a way out, but you need to cooperate. And then, you know what, Maggie? That's a bit of hope as well.
I certainly hope so. Go G20. Go Nabil. My two special guests, Nabil Ahmed, Director of Economic and Racial Justice at Oxfam America, Scott Ellis, founder of the Excessive Wealth Disorder Institute. These segments go so fast, gents. We're going to have to leave it there. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Back with Dom Selvey after these important messages.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
What's up, Wisconsin and beyond? I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Joined every Monday in the 3:30 half an hour by my partner in crime, meaning media broadcasting, Dom Selvey, host of The Dom Selvey Show, which follows this great program every Monday through Friday from 4 to 6 p.m. Dom, of course, also the one that gets to give away some green or gold during the 2 weeks of Civic Media's statewide Go for the Green or Gold Text to Win contest. You're going to want to keep it locked for Dom. He's going to drop that secret word of the hour on you in the 4 o'clock hour. Have your cell phone with the Civic Media app downloaded and ready. You're going to text that secret word and win either $100 or some gold jewelry today in the 4 o'clock hour, and that will also enter you to win a pair of indoor club-level tickets to see the Green and Gold in Green Bay on Monday, December 23rd against New Orleans. But, Dom, we're not here to talk about football, my friend.
No, we're not? Okay, all right. Hey, well, Maggie.
Hey, friend. We can always talk a little football. But we got a couple callers on. They're responding to a couple of things that we've been talking about. Let's go to the phones, folks. You know, with me and Dom, anything goes. Any topic is open for discussion. We got a couple of things we always want to talk about. But you are welcome to join us. 855-75-CIVIC. That's 855-752-4842. All callers and texters, welcome. Mark from Prairie du Sac, you had a couple of comments.
Hey, Mark.
Yeah, well, number one, getting back to the point you were making, where they're talking about holy matrimony, you know, dictated by Project 2025, I might remind them, from my understanding, that in Puritan New England, that they didn't even go to have church weddings. You actually went to a courthouse and registered with a church, with a court, rather than the church, because they couldn't find holy matrimony in the Bible. So they didn't think it was actually scriptural, so they didn't recognize that. And it is just baffling to me. And for women who have had miscarriages, who can't get proper care, it is just criminal. These people need to be called out and shunned and shamed that they're doing this kind of thing. Their names need to be published, and they need to be... It's just horrifying that women are being put for this. And women are actually dying. We actually now have documented cases of women dying because of not getting the care that they actually need. I mean,
yeah, that is the harsh reality of where we are today as a country. I'll give you some names: Samuel Alito, Clarence Thomas, Amy Coney Barrett, Brett Kavanaugh, right? I got a couple more names. Donald J. Trump, J.D. Vance. This is retrograde. This is Handmaid's Tale type of stuff. It is unacceptable. We have a separation of church and state. Your religious beliefs do not get to define my rights. Full and complete stop. Thanks so much, Mark. Hope you're doing well on this Monday. Billy from Madison, but not Billy Madison. Welcome to the Maggie Dawn Show. What do you have to say, sir?
Hey, long-time listener, first-time caller. Thanks for taking my call. Regarding your recent conversation about wealth in our country, I just wanted to bring up Michelle Obama's powerful framing of the affirmative action
yes.
and generational wealth
yes.
that she talked about in the DNC, which I thought was powerful. And I just want to add that, you know, that doesn't mean that affirmative action or generational wealth is shameful. I think it means that just as, of course, as your guest mentioned, does somebody want to save a couple million dollars to pass on to their kids? Do they want to give their kids some advantages? Do I want to get my kids through college without student debt? I do. But it's also okay that our country wants to do that for more people and that there should be limits to it. So, yes, I think that's a powerful framing, and it means that we should have more affirmative action for more people. And that it's okay that you want to, give something to your kids, but there should be some limits.
Well said, Billy. I can just turn the show over to you, my friend, because you nailed it, brother. I was in the audience when Michelle Obama gave that speech. There were two lines that brought me to my feet and nearly caused me to tear up with joy because it was so plain spoken. The first one was, who's going to tell Donald Trump that the presidency might be one of those black jobs,
yeah,
which I just loved.
Great.
And the second one was this, the affirmative action of generational wealth. The Supreme Court, by denying the today impacts of historical racist legislation and policies. Oh, by the way, here's an example of the way it still works. The IRS does not track the demographics of those that they audit. So the earned income child tax credit, when they audit that, the alternative minimum tax, when they audit that, they don't keep track of the race of anybody that gets audited.
Well, I wonder why that is.
Talking about generational wealth as affirmative action, that is what the affirmative action is. The Supreme Court, by denying the impacts of these racist policies, which were baked into our legal system, the legacy of Jim Crow, which reached its tentacles into and deep into the 70s and 80s, to deny that impact on outcomes today and to prevent any discussion of race in sort of any affirmative legislation is racist in and of itself. And secondly, it is so denying of reality. Thirdly, what it does is it preserves the status quo ante, which means the rich white dude landowners and the billionaire class and the oligarchy of today, they get affirmative action. None of us regular folks do. Thank you so much for the call, Billy, in Madison. Speaking of one of those oligarchs doing really shady stuff, Dom.
Yeah.
Wow. Eric Hovde apparently okay with planes of cash.
I mean,
we got Mitt Romney with the binders of women. We got Eric Hovde with the planes of cash from Mexico. Folks, if you missed it, Dan Bice last week breaking some news that the 10th largest financial institution in Mexico, Banco Azteca, who is basically dropped like a hot potato by almost all U.S. banks, frankly, as of 2021, there was not a single bank doing business with it in the U.S. So that's 2021, according to Dan Bice. Banco Azteca had no correspondent banks in the U.S. with which it could transfer U.S. currency. Oh, but there's Eric Hovde.
They found one
in Eric Hovde. Eric's like, eh. So much of those, quote, risk and compliance concerns, so much, I just won't worry about the reporting from Reuters, the reporting from, I think Yale did the Yale Journal of International Affairs. They were finding ties between Mexican drug cartels and Banco Azteca. Hovde says, no problem. Give me your cash. Load up the planes. Bring it on over. They call it currency repatriation. Doesn't that sound nice and benign?
You know, put a little bit in my bank. Why don't you? Eric Hovde. Now, no allegation of illegal wrongdoing, but certainly when there is a bank that my understanding, even from Bice's article, was in trouble even recently trying to bribe legislators to convince them to do business with the bank. You know, that kind of action. In the past, apparently, this bank doing some business with the cartels. Certainly concerning. And what, crates of money? What? How much is it? $23 million in cash?
I don't know. I'm a lawyer. I've done regulatory compliance. I think a little red flag for me would be the Mexican bank flying planes with crates of cash to drop it off at my bank when no other U.S. bank will work with them because of credible reporting from Reuters and, you know, that fly-by-night operation, Yale, saying that there might be ties to the cartels. I'm not really going to be like, hey, I'll take your cash, no problem. This is astounding to me, especially given that, of course, Donald Trump has wrapped his arms around Eric Hovde, planting a big old fat smoochie on his kiss. Loves the guy because he's an old rich white dude. That's Donald Trump's type. Loves Eric Hovde. Here's, again, this is from the Bice article. This is truly shocking to me, given all of the nonsense and lies that are being peddled by Donald Trump and J.D. Vance about fentanyl and migrant workers and kidnappings and all of this nonsense. By the way, folks, just a little point of fact, the FBI releasing crime statistics over the weekend shows that violent crime in the United States down another huge percentage year over year from last year. We're now back down to pre-pandemic levels. Of course.
So as Trump said, through the roof.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
No. The absolute opposite. Okay. Murders down 11%. Oh, and of course, the FBI crime statistics, which included statistics from local and state law enforcement agencies covering 96% of the population, showing crime down to pre-pandemic levels. Oh, and yes, in communities with higher percentages of immigrants and migrants, lower rates of violent crime. So everything Donald Trump and J.D. Vance telling you, a lie.
A lie. And verifiable. And if you believe, if you listen to J.D. Vance and Donald Trump, they'll tell you what next? Well, the DOJ, the FBI, they're the ones lying to you.
Of course. Yeah, except their data comes from state and local governments, and apparently Trump and J.D. back the blue, but not the blue if you're federal, but the feds got the money from the local blue.
But they're the party of law and order.
Of course. It all makes perfect sense.
Got it. Okay.
But back to Hovde. Keep in mind their talking points, okay? Eric Hovde doing business, taking planefuls of cash from Banco Azteca. Over the past decade, several news accounts, including two by Reuters, have drawn links between Banco Azteca and Mexican gangs. Specifically gangs that are the leading suppliers of cocaine, heroin, and what? Fentanyl.
Oh, they're really concerned about fentanyl.
Fentanyl into the U.S. They're so worried about it. Hovde wants to talk about the border, and Trump wants to, and they all talk fentanyl in the border. But Hovde, oh, no problem. Banco Azteca, bring your $26 million over. And it's weird when you get 26 and just cash. That's strange.
I wonder if any fell off the truck. You know, was D.B. Cooper on that plane?
Oh, right?
That's what I'm saying.
What happened to D.B. Cooper? It's a show for a different day. We got to do like a conspiracy podcast, Tom. And in 2023, Reuters wrote that drug cartels were using remittances, money transfers favored by migrant workers, to send illicit earnings from the drug trade back to Mexico. The Reuters reporter said he witnessed five individuals on motorcycles collecting cash from people leaving branch offices of three banks, including Banco Azteca in Mexico. Locals said that these people on the motorcycles witnessed by the Reuters reporter were from the Sinaloa cartel.
So that wasn't like an armored truck.
No.
Guys in backpacks on bikes. Those are ones doing the drops, huh? Okay.
And then this one, 2014, Reuters. quoted a prominent anti-kidnapping activist saying, Mexican gangs involved in kidnapping migrants ask for the money to be sent to Banco Azteca. And Yale, Banco Azteca, one of the four banks the Mexican cartel uses to process extortion payments. Eric Hovde, just the kind of institution you should be doing business with, sir.
Your future senator, question mark. Ben Wickler, chair of the Wisconsin Democratic Party, they had a presser on this today. He said this, that the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel's report on Hovde's bank receiving millions of dollars in cash flown across the border is eye-popping, and Eric Hovde has to come clean about which other foreign entities his bank is doing business with. If he doesn't come clean, how can Wisconsinites trust Eric Hovde to work for them instead of for his questionable foreign business partners? Question mark?
I mean, if the bar is that low, little kidnapping, little fentanyl trading,
I mean, it's
little extortion.
It's right on financial institutions. I mean, at least Trump had to make him stay at the post office hotel in D.C. in order to get that money
that way.
Back to him.
Yeah, it was indirect. Right. It was washed better.
Right.
Listen, that's Dom Salvia. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Your comments, questions, we might talk a little Glenn Grothman. He's always good for a
growth.
Some good sound. All that and so much more when we come back. 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. Keep it locked here on the Civic Media Radio Network. It's me. What's up? Coming in a little hot there, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. I'm going to be joined every Monday in the 3:30 block with my partner in broadcasting, Dom Salvia. His show comes right after mine every day, 4 to 6 p.m. He's coming up next. You want to get your last licks in? Call and text lines are open, 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. Wes from Middleton commenting on Eric Hovde. When Hovde takes a big old fat L in November, I wonder if he's going to sell his multi-million dollar vacation mansion on Lake Mendota and finally cut his last tiny little tie with Wisconsin. Or if we're going to have to suffer through a couple more Senate and governor runs by him until he gets the hint. Wes, I love it. You carpetbagger. Listen, I had to start today with Glenn Grothman, right? He was railing on about this stupid poison pill that Speaker Mike Johnson tried to stick into the government funding package, scaring the crap out of people by claiming that non-citizens are voting, despite the fact that the Heritage Foundation, over a 20-year analysis, found a whopping 24 instances.
The Heritage Foundation, yeah. The Project 2025, yes. Folks, the ones that are
tried
railing against
really
this.
Hard.
They tried really hard.
They were looking.
And of course, Glenn does not ever avail himself of any fact, nor does he have any ounce of humility that, like, maybe I might be wrong. Glenn, not knowing that Heritage Foundation work, Glenn not realizing that there are federal laws from 1996 and 1993 that ensure that only citizens vote. Glenn said this.
What's the evidence that it's happening? Where have you seen that?
Well, I haven't seen it, but we know it's happening, right?
Yes. That's
feel it in my bones,
yes,
Maggie.
That's Glenn. What an idiot. And then this guy, so of course, what is that layered in? What is that coming from? It's this virulent strain of racism, right? Donald Trump trades in it every day. J.D. Vance trades in it every day. In fact, the entire Republican Party is now the party of racists. And if you are a conservative or a Republican and you're listening to this and you're saying, Maggie, that is offensive, I'm not a racist, guess what? You might be voting for Kamala Harris this November, because if you disavow that, if you believe that those sorts of viewpoints, trading and dog whistles, appealing to the most base of our instincts, that that's all bad, that this should be a country for all Americans, guess what? You might be one of those Republicans that decides to vote for Kamala Harris this November because this is what's on the ballot. Returning to Glenn Grothman, that statement by him is a racist attack on immigrants, right? That is what that is. It is trading in racial stereotypes. It is trading in the replacement theory, an overtly racist trope. And then he has the audacity to say things like this, Jess, it's going to be cut 1.2.
There is this hostility to traditional values that is seeping into the public schools today. We recently read a poll showing that of people in the baby boom generation, over 60% are proud to be American, where people under 25 are no longer proud to be American. Where do they get this? They get this because some members of the schools, too many, and you can hear it from that side of the aisle, are obsessed with racism. This in such a open,
shut up,
you know,
Glenn.
People are coming here
shut
from all
up.
Over the world. You have to be
This is the problem. It's like we're talking about race because, Glenn, you don't even know racism when it comes spewing out of your own mouth. It's so shocking to me. And all of this coming from a guy who said this. This is the short clip about rallying around guns. Let's take a listen.
We have to rally and make it impossible, politically impossible, for anybody else to do what the New Mexico governor did a few weeks ago. The Second Amendment is designed to keep the power in this country with the people, and just because we have a family breakdown together with ultra-left-wing judges and district attorneys is no reason to give up on our Second Amendment. Rally, America! Rally around that Second Amendment.
Wow.
Dear Glenn, right? Like dot, dot, dot. Your reactions, Tom.
I mean, it's so Glenn Grothman.
It's Grossman.
Grossman, yes. The congressman from the great state of Wisconsin has continually said these things over and over and over again. And it's not just the fact that it's racist, which is terrible enough, but when they use the legislative process to try and enact their political games by attaching this poison pill to make something more illegal than it's already illegal, to shut down the government to do the bidding of their guy, Donald Trump. He wants the government shut down.
Yeah.
And guys like Donald Trump and Johnson initially using this to try to stir up some political favor. Not just saying the racist things, but using it in legislation, in proposals to put it, to codify it.
And by the way, Glenn, it's not the Second Amendment that preserves power in the people. It's elections, you moron. Because if the government controlled by a dictator like Donald Trump wanted to wipe your butt off the planet, he could do so. A president that is a king and immune from prosecution who dispatches the DOJ and the national security apparatus to eliminate his political enemies, that is what erodes democracy. Kamala Harris and Uncle Tim Walz, they own guns. Nobody's coming for them. Chillax, Glenn. Maybe get yourself some facts. That's going to do it for me. I'm Maggie Dawn. You've been listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. The Dom Salvia Show is next. He's going to give away some green or gold. You're not going to want to miss that, folks. Thanks for tuning in. I'll stand up for you. I hope you stand up for me. But remember, it is always better when we stand together.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.